I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, a taxing matter. President Trump hosts the Prime Minister of Ireland amid a slew of new tariffs taking effect. We're at the White House, pushing for peace. Russia launches new attacks on Ukraine as the Kremlin considers a U.S.-backed ceasefire proposal. Health update. We have the latest on the condition of the Holy Father as he approaches the one-month mark in the hospital. And fighting for the faithful. A House subcommittee hearing addresses ongoing persecution against Christians in Africa. We speak to a Nigerian bishop. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, amid a growing trade war with Europe, President Donald Trump welcomes the leader of Ireland to the White House. Today, the president officially increased tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports to 25%. And while the escalating tariffs could hurt U.S. businesses and consumers, Americans got some good news today about inflation. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports and asked President Trump for his reaction. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. Good evening to you. Inflation cooled off for the first time in several months, a better-than-expected report. But now the new tariff battle playing out, making for an uncertain future. And earlier today, as you mentioned, I asked President Donald Trump about the latest CPI numbers.
President Trump, your reaction, sir, to the latest inflation numbers in the U.S.?
Very good news.
Moments later, President Donald Trump spoke about the economy while visiting with the Irish Taoiseach, or Prime Minister, in the Oval Office.
We have a problem with the European Union. They don't take our farm products. They don't take our cars. We take millions of cars, BMWs and Mercedes-Benz and Volkswagens and everything. We take millions of cars.
The European Union says it will issue retaliatory tariffs in April on up to $28 billion worth of U.S. exports, including boats, bourbon, and motorcycles. The U.S. Trade Representative responds, if the EU acted as quickly to address global excess capacity as it does to punish the United States, we likely would be in a different situation today. And Canada, the largest steel supplier to the U.S., said today it will place 25% reciprocal tariffs on steel products and also raise taxes on a host of items.
Canada's absolutely one of the worst, and when I say worst in terms of charging tariffs, the dairy products, they charge our farmers 240, 250, 270, and 400%, okay? Think of that for dairy product. And we charge them like peanuts.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio also defends the U.S. tariffs.
He's imposed steel and aluminum tariffs now on virtually the entire world. And the reason why is not to punish those countries. It's because he has outlined the need to develop a domestic capability. If you don't have steel and aluminum, you can't build warships. You can't build airplanes.
President Trump and Michael Martin later made a trip to Capitol Hill to visit with lawmakers.
And we're gathered to celebrate the deep and abiding ties of history, family, and friendship that bind together Ireland and the United States of America.
In his meeting with the Irish Taoiseach, President Trump said the U.S. has a massive deficit with Ireland, adding Ireland was very smart for taking pharmaceutical companies away from earlier U.S. presidents who he says didn't know what they were doing. In addition, he said the EU treats the U.S. very badly. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
The war in Ukraine may soon be on hold as U.S. plans to offer a 30-day ceasefire agreement to Russia in the coming days. The agreement comes after several days of talks between U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and top Ukrainian officials in Saudi Arabia. Ukraine has accepted the deal, but now the world waits for Russia's response.
We'll see what their response is. If their response is yes, then we know we've made real progress and there's a real chance of peace. If their response is no, it would be highly unfortunate and it would make their intentions clear.
And joining us now is Amy Mitchell, a fellow at the National Security Institute. Amy, good to be with you today. So what more do we know about this ceasefire agreement?
Right now, we're still waiting for a lot of details, Tracy. And we know that National Security Advisor Mike Waltz recently or earlier today spoke with his Russian counterpart. You'll notice that Russia has been very quiet online over the past 24 hours since this announcement. And but that has not stopped them, rather, from continuing to bomb Ukraine intensely in the last week. especially with a tick up over the last 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, Amy, we know the ultimate goal for President Trump and the Trump administration is a lasting peace between Russia and Ukraine. Do you think that this potential ceasefire agreement, do you think it'll get us closer to that goal?
I think lasting peace is very difficult for these two to achieve. We've seen these incursions into Ukraine for over a decade now. So I think, you know, cessation of hostilities for any period of time is a good thing. But long term, I think there is a lot to work out. Putin has a lot of, as the president would say, cards to play. He can kind of bide his time, but I think we'll get an indication of where he's headed in the next 24 to 48 hours, especially as Steve Witkoff, the president's Middle East envoy, heads to Moscow.
Yeah, and what do you expect to happen during those talks?
I think that they're going to be pretty tough. The pressure right now is on Russia, but they have been implacable on, you know, kind of the big ticket items in this conflict that include where the borders end up, the assets, and return of Ukrainian people, especially the children that they've taken.
All right, we have to leave it right there. Amy, thank you so much for being with us and for your insights. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, on the Senate floor, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer making quite a statement. Senate Democrats are prepared to block a Republican bill to keep the government open.
Funding the government should be a bipartisan effort, but Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input from congressional Democrats. Because of that, Republicans do not have the votes in the Senate to invoke cloture on the House CR.
Yesterday, the GOP-controlled House passed a continuing resolution funding the government until September 30th, the end of the fiscal year. Now, earlier today, Senate Democrats held a caucus meeting to decide what their next steps are. Prior to that meeting, we spoke with Pennsylvania Democrat John Fetterman and others about a possible shutdown.
And that's a CR that I know there's not one single Democrat, including myself, that agree with all these elements as well now, too. So make that choice. You're going to shut the government down or no, and I'm not going to do that. And that's doing the hard and the right thing.
Democrats are saying they may shut down the government.
I mean, okay. I just can't imagine they're going to do that. I mean, how are they going to explain that to the American people?
The Republican-controlled Senate will need 7 or 8 Democrat votes in order to pass the CR. A vote must come by midnight Friday in order to prevent the shutdown. Now, the Department of Education is slashing nearly half of its workforce. Employees got a memo yesterday telling them to vacate their offices and work from home today. Those impacted by the cuts will go on administrative leave beginning March 21st. The department currently employs about 4,100 people. The layoffs will take effect in 90 days. While during a deportation hearing, a judge has decided that Mahmoud Khalil will remain in custody in Louisiana, that is. Khalil is a legal resident who was arrested and detained by federal agents over the weekend after his green card was revoked by the Trump administration. That is according to Khalil's lawyer. Khalil was born in Syria and raised in a Palestinian refugee camp. Last year, he helped to lead demonstrations on the Columbian campus against Israel's war in Gaza. The Trump administration has alleged that Khalil was a supporter of the terror group Hamas. Authorities have not charged him with any kind of crime nor provided any evidence showing a connection between Khalil and Hamas. As today's hearing was taking place, hundreds of protesters gathered outside and inside the Manhattan federal courthouse to show their support for Khalil. Khalil's lawyers want their client returned to New York and released under supervision. They argue that he engaged in protected free speech and that the government is illegally retaliating against him over it. The government lawyer wants to have the case moved to New Jersey or Louisiana, where Khalil is being held. The judge asked the government to file written arguments by Friday on that motion. And for more on the case, let's bring in an immigration attorney, Paul Hunker. Paul, good to be with you today. As we know, Khalil was arrested despite having a green card. For those who maybe aren't familiar with green cards, tell us a little bit more about them and the protections that green card holders have, if at all, any.
A person who has a green card, Tracy, is a lawful permanent resident. They have the right to reside in the United States. they can still be removed from the country if they engage in what's called removable activity. Typically, that's criminal activity, but there are other bases to remove a lawful permanent resident, such as engaging in terrorist activity.
Yeah, and in a post on X, the Department of Homeland Security talked about Khalil's arrest, stating that Khalil led activities aligned to Hamas, a designated terrorist organization. ICE and the Department of State are committed to enforcing President Trump's executive orders and to protecting U.S. national security. I'd like to get your thoughts on that. As we understand, he has not been charged with any type of crime. Your interpretation of all this?
Well, one of the reasons a lawful permanent resident can be removed is if the Secretary of State determines that his activity in the United States has serious foreign policy consequences. Tracy, that's a rarely used charge. So I haven't seen the charges. I haven't seen the evidence. So we'll have to see, what the government's theory is.
Yeah, and earlier today, Paul, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, he spoke out. Here's what he had to say. Let's take a listen.
This is not about free speech. This is about people that don't have a right to be in the United States to begin with. No one has a right to a student visa. No one has a right to a green card, by the way. So when you apply for a student visa or any visa to enter the United States, we have a right to deny you for virtually any reason.
Paul, your thoughts on that?
A person who has a green card has a right to reside here, and the government can only take that away if they have strong evidence that the person is removable. I'm concerned that the government is targeting Khalid and will be targeting other Palestinian activists for legitimate First Amendment activity. If you look at President Trump's tweets, he seems to consider them troublemakers. So I'm concerned about the government's damaging or attacking people's First Amendment rights.
Almost out of time, but quickly want to get to this. President Trump said Khalil's arrest was the first of many to come, vowing on social media to deport students that he described as engaging in pro-terrorist, anti-Semitic, anti-American activity. How is that defined? Who defines that?
That's a good question, Tracy. Generally, people can say a lot. They can say things that people don't like. That's part of our country's First Amendment rights. So I'm concerned that if the government's going after Khalid for protected First Amendment activity, the government can go after other people for protected First Amendment activity. I think we as Catholics want to protect freedom of speech because it ends up protecting our freedom of speech.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Paul, thank you for weighing in. We appreciate it. All right, an update now on the Holy Father, whose health condition remains stable as he spends his fourth week at the hospital, even though his doctors are still describing his clinical picture as complex. The Vatican announced today that the x-rays performed yesterday on Pope Francis confirm continued improvements. The Pope is still undergoing high-flow oxygen therapy during the day and non-invasive mechanical ventilation during the night. As for the past few days, the Holy Father continues to follow the spiritual exercises of the Roman Curia via video link and spending time in prayer. We have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including dying for the faith. As a House committee discusses Christian persecution in Africa, we speak to a Nigerian bishop about the terrors that he's seen and where he sees hope. And the results are in. What the election results in Greenland mean for the territory and the U.S. A center right party that favors a gradual path to independence from Denmark has won Greenland's parliamentary elections. The Demokratiet Party won nearly 30% of the vote in its surprise victory. The party's leader says the result should send a clear message to President Trump that Greenland is not for sale. Four of the five main parties in the race were seeking independence, but disagreed on how and when. All new developments tonight in the cargo ship that collided with a U.S. tanker in the North Sea. The cargo ship's owner says the vessel's captain is a Russian national who remains in U.K. custody. The 59-year-old man, who has not been named, was arrested on Tuesday for suspicion of manslaughter by gross negligence. U.K. authorities say so far they have found no evidence of foul play in that crash. While Pakistani officials say an insurgent attack on a train carrying hundreds of people has ended after more than 50 attackers were killed. Officials added that more than 300 hostages were rescued while some were killed. Separatists attacked the train on Tuesday while it passed through a tunnel. The group's leader originally said that they would free passengers in exchange for the release of jailed militants. Religious persecutions in Nigeria continue to make headlines. Watchdog groups accuse the Nigerian government of turning a blind eye to the thousands of cases of kidnappings and mass killings of Christians, including Catholics. Now, U.S. lawmakers are intensifying calls for the Trump administration to take action. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story.
Good evening, Tracy. Nigeria has become known as the world's center of Christian martyrs. The number of Christians killed by extremist groups is rarely less than 4,000 per year, often more than in the rest of the world combined. Today, a House panel took a closer look at the persecution of Christians in Africa's largest populated country.
The government has not protected them, has not sought any justice for those who have been killed and women raped. Abductions are absolutely through the roof. There was one priest who on Ash Wednesday, Father Sylvester, who was abducted and shot in the head.
Bishop Wilfred Anagbe of the Diocese of Makurdi, Nigeria, testified before the panel and tells me the crackdown on Christians is an organized effort.
The persecution of Christians generally and Catholics in Nigeria is the work of an Islamic agenda to conquer the territory and become an Islamic state of West Africa.
Violence against Christians is primarily localized in the north, where 12 Muslim-majority states declared Sharia law in 1999. But the rise of the extremist movement, Boko Haram, in 2009, has escalated the murders of Christians in the region. Democrats blame the Trump administration for making the problem worse.
That the mass cancellation of USAID projects and the dismantling of USAID by the Trump administration will only worsen this violence and weaken the institutions needed to combat extremism.
The bishop and others are also urging President Trump to redesignate Nigeria as a country of particular concern,
which gives our government some tools to try to bring them into a proper alignment when it comes to religious freedom and making sure that Christians and other religious minorities were not persecuted. Unfortunately, the Biden administration removed that.
The bishop is asking all Catholics to pray.
This advocacy is important. No, because we can't just die in silence. We should know, but we'll pray first because we are men and women of hope. And actually, hope, our hope is alive. We don't hope in princes, we don't hope in kings, we don't hope in rulers. We hope in God.
The death toll continues to rise. Some are calling it a genocide, and many say that this is an issue the Trump administration cannot ignore. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, praying for more babies. What one organization is doing helps of bringing about more births in the U.S. and how you can get involved. Plus, some big changes are coming to a beloved EWTN program. The exciting news we have to share with you about EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. In the West are on the decline, but one group is making it their mission to pray for more babies in 2025. Pro-life diaper company Every Life is inviting all married couples hoping to have a baby to be, quote, covered in prayer. They can request to be prayed for through the end of the year. And joining us now to talk more about this is Sarah Gable, president and co-founder of Every Life, a pro-life diaper company. Sarah, good to see you. Tell us a little bit more about the campaign and really what inspired you to launch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. So this campaign was really inspired out of really just speaking to the core of who we are at Every Life. We believe that every child is a miraculous gift from God that deserves our love, our attention, our care, and protection. And we live in a world today that is not valuing life at the degree that they should. And we want more children in this world, not less. So many young people today are considering not having children at all, putting off marriage and, again, parenthood. And we're trying to counteract that narrative and basically say that we see children as a gift, not a burden, not an inconvenience. And with fertility rates declining at historical lows, we're seeing that there really is a need for prayer, that prayer is the solution, that God is the way. And we know that there's so many couples out there that are believing, that are longing for more children or their first. And we want to come alongside them to let them know that we are with them, that we are for them, that they are not alone. And we have compiled an incredible prayer team together of prominent leaders in the faith. We have Charlie and Erica Kirk, Lisa and John Bevere, Allie B. Stuckey and her husband, Timothy, Lila Rose and her husband, Joe, and so many others that are committed to praying for these families by name. We have this prayer request form open until April 11th. If you go to everylife.com/pray, you can submit it right now. And we will cover you through 2025, believing that God is going to do what only he can, and that we are going to see more children come out of this initiative, because prayer is the solution. Prayer is powerful.
Amen to that. And are we going to hear any success stories out of this? We talk about that as well.
Absolutely. We are going to be communicating with every single one of the families every single month through email and through texting, and they have the ability to update us on prayer anything that God does. We want to know, and we want to hear that, whether that be through a pregnancy or a successful adoption. We're going to be sharing that as much as these families will let us, so we can have our entire community at Every Life and Beyond be aware of what God is doing and how he is blessing more families with children, because children are our legacy, they're our hope, they're our future. And without strong families, we do not have a strong nation. And so I'm really excited to see really America start to embrace family first values, because that is how we begin to grow and excel in the direction that we need to go as a country.
Sarah, I love this initiative so much, and I can't wait to see all the pictures of the brand new babies. This is wonderful. God bless you, and thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And of course, we love to bring stories like Sarah's to our viewers, not only on EWTN News Nightly, but across the network. EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly is a show solely devoted to that purpose. And now you can see it right here on Wednesdays, right after EWTN News Nightly at 6:30. And host of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, Abigail Galvin, joins us now to talk about this exciting time. So great to have you here, Abby.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tracy. We're so excited to have this prime spot in the lineup to cover topics like abortion, euthanasia, the death penalty, and of course, those working on the front lines to save lives and promote life.
It's so exciting. I know you'll be able to share this with even more people when you start at 6:30. Tell us what you have coming up on the show.
We have a pretty packed show, Tracy. First, we're talking with the Catholic Conference of Illinois, who are combating two assisted suicide bills in their state legislature. And unfortunately, several other states are also trying to pass euthanasia laws. To discuss this disturbing trend, we have Jim Tuohy and his son, Jamie, of Aging with Dignity, to talk about the rights of all people as they approach the end of life. And we'll have a unique campaign this season of Lent. And to close, we're going to be discussing how a state is seeking to offer a 100% tax credit to those donating to pro-life pregnancy centers.
Well, we're going to be watching. We hope everyone is too. Abby, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us. And congratulations on the new time slot.
Oh, thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome. God bless. All right, EWTN Pro-Life Weekly airs at 6:30 p.m. And that is in just a few minutes. Do not forget to tune in. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.